السلام عليكم ورحمة الله everyone. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. It's good and pleasurable to be here among Mu'minun talking about Imam al-Mahdi. عجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف. Now, those of you who may have been in the previous course, and you may remember, because that's long time ago, we took a sort of historical approach towards the idea of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and the way Shia and Sunni have discussed the issue, and then we went through some incidents and events which are going to happen before his reappearance, and then what will happen later on. I may repeat some of those things, but mainly the approach in these five sessions would be different. It would be more conceptual than historical. And I will discuss, as the title of the course is, his position and his mission. What is the position of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam now? Why he should be there while we do not see him? What's the point of the Imam who is absent and we cannot communicate with him? So what position in the whole picture of the creation of human being the Imam has, and what role it plays? This is what initially I'm going to discuss, and then inshallah we'll go to discuss or analyze his mission at the end. Why does he come at the end of the time? Why do we need someone at the end of the time to come and establish justice rather than now, which we are in need of him much more than any other time or during the history? I mean, we have had this. So what is the purpose, first of all, of him coming at the end of the time, and what will be his mission? And here, of course, we try to be somehow using different sources, the Quran, the Hadith, and some analysis, rational analysis about the issue. Now, one point which is very important in Shia thought is the knowledge about God which should continuously exist on the earth. Otherwise, the whole existence of human being on the earth would be futile. You know, when we live our lives, we think that, okay, we are created just for this life, we have to come, enjoy for a while, or live for a while, suffer for a while, have families, and then go. And this is the type of picture that when people see it, amidst all the calamities and evil and difficulties, they say, wow, what sort of God he should be creating us like that. So, a very crucial point in the Shi'i thought is that we are not created to live just for life. We are created for some purpose. And that, of course, you know, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. I've not created man and jinn but to worship, and that worship means knowledge, and that knowledge should be somewhere. Now, we may have access to that knowledge, we may not have access to that knowledge. I will discuss this later. But that, if that knowledge is withdrawn from the earth, if no one has that knowledge, I don't mean the knowledge that we have about God. We don't have knowledge about God. We have feeling about God. We have faith in God. But knowledge about God, that's a different issue. If that is withdrawn, we have in many traditions, we will come to those traditions, if that is withdrawn from the earth, then of course the whole purpose of creation goes to vain, and therefore, سَاخَتُ الْأَرْضُ الْأَعْلَى, the earth would swallow its inhabitants, because this, we have many traditions that if the Imam is not there, the earth will swallow all in his inhabitants. Now, the Imam, when we are talking about, is that focus, that point where the knowledge descends, where this knowledge, where the sort of connection between man and God is preserved through connection, authentic connection, that is preserved. If that connection is not preserved, then of course many things may happen in this world. Now, I want to start with a hadith from Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salam. This hadith is a very famous one. It is reported in many different books. I've just listed some of the books in which the hadith is reported. It's reported by Saduq. It's reported by Ghazali. Actually, Ghazali has a long discussion in Ihya ul-Ulumuddin about the contents of this hadith, because this is something which many reporters, Sunni and Shia, have reported. Ibn Asakir has reported this in Tariq al-Damash, and I'm reporting this now from Nahj al-Balagh. Sharif al-Rami has reported this in Nahj al-Balagh as well. It's a conversation between Imam Ali alayhi salam and his very faithful disciple Khomeini. Khomeini ibn Ziyad, who reported the dua Khomeini from Amirul Mu'minin. Okay, this is a very, very important conversation. And as I said, because of its importance, many theologians, both from Shia and Sunni, have discussed the contents of this tradition. Now, some of these you know very well, because it's usual statements that we hear from pulpits. But we want to analyze this a bit deeper. Now, the hadith is long. I've just chosen a couple of sentences, and then we go to the real point that I want to make here. It says, يَا قُمِيلَ الْإِلْمُ خَيْرٌ مِنَ الْمَالِ. Knowledge is better than wealth. الْإِلْمُ يَحْرُسُكْ وَأَنْتَ تَحْرُسُ الْمَالِ. The knowledge protects you, but you have to protect your wealth. So that's very outstanding difference that there is between knowledge and wealth. This always we get, I don't know, in Iran we always get this in literature class, write a composition, write an article about which one is better, knowledge or wealth. And of course everyone writes knowledge and everyone thinks wealth is better, you see. It is like that. Usually when you write a composition, you just want to make the teacher happy rather than telling your truth. But the point is that here there's a very good, of course, argument. You have to protect the wealth. Then you need the police, then you need the army, then you go to war, then, I mean, all these things that individually and socially we have about wealth. What about knowledge? No, knowledge is something which protects, which brings peace, which brings tranquility to the mind. وَالْمَالْ تَنْغُسُهُ النَّفَقَ وَالْإِلْمْ يَزْكُ عَلَى الْإِنْفَاقِ. Wealth diminishes with spending, while knowledge swells with spreading. You probably know that where this statement is made. The Khomeini says that one night, Amirul Mu'minin was very depressed, so to speak, and depressed in the sense that he was frustrated from what was happening, and he told me, Khomeini, would you like to walk with me to the country? And they walked outside the city, and then Imam Ali started to talk to him in this way. Now, then he said, "Ha inna ha huna la ilman jamma." He pointed to his chest and said, "The knowledge is accumulated here. It's huge knowledge that I have here." Law asabtu lahu hamala. I wish I could find some to carry it. Some people, someone. Now, of course, what about Khomeini? No, even Khomeini, he does not have that capacity to be given this knowledge. There's one tradition, it's a bit dodgy, of course, because we don't have this tradition in authentic books, but some people like Muhaqqiq Sabzawari and others have reported this hadith that once Imam Ali alayhi salam was asked by Khomeini, Ya Amir al-Mu'minin, what is haqiqa, what's the truth? You know, none of us, all of us are just wandering around in this world, isn't it? I mean, from the top people, scientists, theologians, we are just wandering around, we don't know what. We're just like sleepwalkers, isn't it? I mean, we really don't know what is life, why do we live, what is the truth. We don't know about these things. However, it is very simplistic to think that no one knows about these things and saying that, okay, because we don't know, no one knows. Now, Khomeini asked about that, the truth of this world. And Imam alayhi salam said, مَا لَكَ وَالْحَقِيرَ, what is your position to the truth? How can I tell you what is truth? You cannot, of course, understand that. And he said, أَوَلَسْتُ صَاحِبَ السَّرَكَ, am I not the close disciple who you tell me all your secrets? He said, yes, of course, I tell you my secrets. But about the truth, that knowledge, you just get some splashes from my heart. You cannot, of course, I cannot tell all that knowledge to you. And here he says, I cannot tell this knowledge to everyone. And then he talks about people who may have the capacity, but they have lost themselves, people who are quite religious, committed, faithful, but they don't have the capacity for this knowledge. Then he says, كَذَلِكَ يَمُوتُ الْعِلْمُ بِمَوْتَ حَامِلِي. This is how, when someone who has this knowledge dies, the knowledge dies with him. Because there's no one to learn. If we think that the knowledge of the Prophet, which was in his heart, could be learnt by his companions, who came from different tribes out of desert, staying with him for a couple of years, that knowledge could be conveyed to them, we don't know what was the knowledge of the prophets. We just think, okay, of course, the companion just learned how the prophet prayed, what was the revelation of the Quran, the verses of the Quran, they heard, they saw. But could they really receive that knowledge which was in the heart of the prophet? Of course they couldn't. Now, if there was not someone like Ali ibn Abi Talib who could receive that knowledge, then the knowledge of the Prophet would have just vanished from the earth, isn't it? So there should be someone who can receive that knowledge from the Prophet, from Prophets. That's very important. So the Imam says, if there's no one to receive this knowledge from me, this knowledge would die. كَذَلَكَ يَمُوتُ الْعِلْمُ بِمَوْتَ حَامِلِهِ اللَّهُمَّ بَلَى. Then Imam says, of course, this knowledge never vanishes. It will always be there. اللَّهُمَّ بَلَى لَا تَحْرُ الْأَرْضُ مِنْ قَائِمٍ لِلَّهِ بِحُجَّةٍ. But by God, the earth is never going to be without the one who rises for God with proof. This Hujjah, I will talk about this Hujjah in details, because we call Imam al-Hasan Hujjah ibn al-Hasan, isn't it? He is the Hujjah. That's a very, very important, very important title of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. Now, he said, there is always someone who rises for God with proof, either known and manifest, or hidden and fearful. So that the proof of God and his clear evidence is not invalidated. That proof is always there if someone can communicate with the Imam or wants to communicate. Of course, now there is no want. No one. If someone tells you that I communicated with the Imam and the Imam tells me these things, do not believe them. I mean, we don't want to judge people, but this never happens. This never happens. There has been encounters with the Imam, but not in the sense that Imam teaching someone something. It wasn't like that. But the person with knowledge should be on the earth. This is going to be a problem, I think. Either this is so loose, or I am so agile, isn't it? One of these things. Anyhow, this Hujjah should always be, this is one of the core concepts of Shia faith. It's one of the core differences between Shia and Sunni. You know, I have told this before. The difference between Shia and Sunni is not who should have been politically the caliph after the Prophet. That's not, even if that is the case, that is history. I mean, it would be ridiculous if now we start arguing with each other that, for example, Abu Bakr is the first caliph or Ali ibn Abi Talib is the first caliph. Okay, whatever, this is past. This is history. But what is core is that we say that there is always someone with the knowledge of the prophets on the earth. And if there is no such a person, then the whole earth will be, the whole life of human being will finish. There is no life of human beings, because the philosophy that Allah mentions in the Quran, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ, I have created jinns to worship me, and worship means knowledge, and knowledge should be somewhere. Now, you may say that, okay, the Imam is not here. What's the point? What's the philosophy? You know, Allah sent many books, people just rejected, they killed the prophets. But Allah keeps sending. Allah has something in His plan, He does it. Humans accept it, not accept it. Why the Imam, as Allah says, the Imam is absent not because God doesn't want him to come, but because of us. By us, not individually. Human race does not accept him. I mean, just look what they did to previous Imams. They killed them, they poisoned them, imprisoned them. So, what's the point of the Imam being there in prison, for example? God would have an Imam all the time, but how people treat him is different. God always sent prophets. How people treat the prophets is a different issue. So, the inna alayna lal-huda, guidance is my duty. And God always does His duty. But what you do with that guidance, that's a different issue. Therefore, sometimes we say, okay, Imam is absent. So, what's the philosophy of Imam being there? The philosophy is not that we try to find some way to talk to the Imam. No. The philosophy is that if he is not there, the whole human race would finish, would be ended, the day of judgment should come. If there is not someone with that knowledge. So, here he says that, Imam Ali Salam says that there will always be a hujja. Always there will be a hujja. That hujja may be manifest, may be known, like the Prophet. Okay? But, like Amir al-Mu'minin himself, like Ali, peace be upon him. He was unknown. To majority of the people, he was unknown. Sometimes they are fearful of their lives. And they have to be unknown. They have to live unknown. Most of our ayama were like that. Imam al-Asr is like that as well. But the hujja is there. Now, then he says, وَكَمْثَ وَأَيْنَ أُولَاد. How many are they? Where do they dwell? أُولَٰئِكَ وَاللَّهَ الْأَقَلُّونَ عَدَدًا. By God, their number is few. But their value with God is great. And we know the number of people with that inspired knowledge from God, the true knowledge of God, of course, very, very limited. By them, God preserves His proofs and His clear evidence until they entrust it to their counterparts and show it in the hearts of their likes. يَزْرَعُوهَا فِي قُلُوبَ أَشْوَاهِمْ. You see, it goes from heart to heart. It's not a knowledge that they can learn in books, that they write a book so that their successor would read. No. Just like the knowledge of the Prophet, which went from his heart to the heart of Amir al-Mu'minin, and he became his vassal. يَزْرَعُوهَا فِي قُلُوبَ أَشْوَاهِمْ. They sow it in the hearts of their likes. حَجَمَ بِهِ. And then gives a little description of it. حَجَمَ بِهِمُ الْعِلْمُ عَلَىٰ حَقِيقَةِ الْبَصِيرَةِ. Knowledge has ushered them into the roots of insights. So the quality of the knowledge is different from our knowledge. Of course, very, very different. وَبَاشَرُوا رُوحَ الْيَقِينِ. They have touched the spirit. spirit of certainty without mediation. It's just as they are seeing the Lord. That's how they are. وَصَحِبُ الدُّنْيَا بِعَبْدَانٍ أَرْوَاهُمَا مُعَلَّقَةً بِالْمَحَلِّ الْأَعْلَى. They accompany this world with bodies, the souls of which are thrown to the higher realm. Now, here there are two things that Imam mentions. أُولَٰئِكَ خُلَفَاءُ اللَّهِ فِي أَرْضٍ. These are the caliphs of God, viceroys of God in His earth, and the corners to His faith. And they have to be there. وَإِذْ قَالَ رَبُّكَ لِلْمَلَائِكَةِ إِنِّي جَاعِلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةً. When Allah said, I'm putting a khalifa on the earth, a viceroy. And he was Adam alayhi salam. And then, of course, I will talk about the meaning of khalifa and what does it mean with relation to us and with relation to the Imam. That's a very interesting concept that we have to discuss. However, the khulafa, khalifatullah on the earth, are these people, not us. Of course, we say, man is khalifatullah. Not, it doesn't mean, for example, me or you, or for example, Saddam Hussein, or anyone else are khalifatullah on the earth. Some of us are khalifatul shaitan. There is one hadith that is, it says that some people Allah rejects from his wilaya to wilaya to shaitan. Shaitan does not accept them, rejects them. I don't want them. They would pollute me. These people would pollute me. Some people are like that, really. So how are they going to be khalifatullah? Now, there are certain things, several conclusions that we can infer from this narration. One, their knowledge cannot be transferred to everyone. You said, I cannot find anyone to transfer this knowledge. Of course, you could transfer it to Imam Hassan and Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Just needs to no one else. Just like Prophet could not transfer his knowledge. The main difference between Shia and Sunni here is that there is a knowledge of the Prophet which cannot be seen outwardly, cannot be said. All of us know. I mean, people who have this close relation with God cannot say whatever they experience. And our Sunni brothers, they think that whatever Prophet knew, he could say to everyone and everyone learned. That's not possible. I mean, that was not everyone's cup. And therefore, there was, the Prophet mentioned, this hadith of course is very famous by Shia and Sunni, أَنَا مَدِينَةُ الْعِلْمِ وَعَلِيُّمْ وَوَهُ. I am the city of knowledge, Ali is the gate. I mean, after me, if you want this knowledge, come through this gate. You cannot find it with any other companion. And this is why, of course, for us Shias, Ali ibn Abi Talib has a prominent role, not comparable with any other companion. Some of the criticism which is directed to us is that why you give Ali more importance than other companions? Well, it's very clear from our philosophy, of Imamah, from our philosophy of knowledge of the Prophet, knowledge of God on the earth, it's very clear that we cannot give this to every companion. Even those very, very close companions of the Prophet whom we respect very much, like Salman, like Abu Zar, like Miqdad, like Ammar, not mentioning everyone, of course, you name them. There are many, many close companions of Prophet whom we respect from the bottom of our hearts. But we don't give them this position. It's not possible to give them this position. This is a reserved position only for Hujjatullah. So, their knowledge cannot be transferred to everyone. They are proofs of God. And therefore, if they are not there, the proofs of God are invalidated. It means that people would be, there's no one having this knowledge, which may, for those who want, for those who are capable of receiving this knowledge, there's no one. And the proofs of God are invalidated if they do not exist. They are the viceroys of God on the earth. They are the callers to faith. They exist in all times, and the earth cannot be without them, as Imam Ali said. The earth will never be free of some such people. They are indispensable. One of them equals to the whole human race, because they are indispensable. And the human race cannot continue we'll see these traditions. Okay, this was just an introduction. Any question up till now? Any questions? No. Okay, we can. Yes.
It's just you mentioned the fact that this knowledge they carry, they cannot transfer it to anyone else, only within themselves. And yet, on the other hand, the concept of the fact that they are there, so that this knowledge is preserved, so that whoever wants it can get it. So what is the point of them carrying that knowledge if they cannot transfer it to anybody else but themselves?
You know, when you say anyone wants that knowledge can get it, not that they can completely transfer that knowledge. Anyone who has any question about God, anyone who is confused about God, anyone who wants to have an authentic description of God, an authentic description of creation, they are there. They can convey it. Now you may say, okay, we want, but we have no access to them. But the point is, we live collectively. We live in societies. Societies have deprived us, individuals, from having access to them. As in the early Islam days we had, I mean, people could not easily access the Imam, either in prison or in house arrest, in Samarra and other places. So it is the society which deprives. And also sometimes, you know, for example, many prophets came and the societies opposed them, the rulers, the people of authority opposed them and deprived other people to have access to them. See, so what is God's duty is to have these people on the earth. What is our duty is to actually remove the barriers so that we can have access, everyone who wants can have access to them. Yes.
Could we be compatible recipients even if they wished to transfer?
Could we even be compatible recipients. As I said, they cannot transfer all that knowledge to us. But any question that we have, to the degree of the purity of our heart, they can convey it, okay? But, yes, if our hearts are impure, that knowledge never comes true. Okay. Yeah, it's not the fault with the mind, the fault is with me. Now, let's see who these people have been. Sorry. And how they have been explained. Now, there are hints in Sunni and Shi'i sources about 12 caliphs or successors after the Prophet. This is very good. In all books of the all sources of credible authority, there is the hadith that the Prophet said there will be 12 caliphs after me. Now, remember this word Khalifa? Khalifa may mean Khalifa to Rasulullah, may mean Khalifa to Allah. Okay? Now, here the Prophet, is it Al-Bukhari, Muslim, Tirmidhi, Abu Dawud, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, all have reported, and then many other books, they have reported from Jabir ibn Samurah, who was a companion, that he heard the Prophet saying, Islam continues with its dignity until 12 caliphs. So this hadith is not disputable. It is in Sahih. Also, in the words of Bukhari, it says, there will be 12 princes after me. And in other narrations, the Prophet is quoted as saying, this matter, that is the matter of guidance, this matter would not expire before 12 caliphs have come forth, all of whom are from Quraysh. Another one. And actually, this hadith was used, you know, by Abu Bakr, something similar to this, in Sa'ifa, against the Ansar, when they said, Minna Amirul wa minkum Amir. Okay, let's have one Amir from us, one Amir from you, Muhajirun. And he said, haven't you heard from the Prophet who said, Al-A'immatu min Quraysh? The Imams are from Quraysh. Now, here, this is, that Al-A'immatu min Quraysh is a very similar thing than there are 12 caliphs after me. All of them are from Quraysh. Now, Quraysh, of course, is a very huge tribe, but we have sub-tribe of Quraysh. We can say any sub-tribe, like, for example, Banu Hashim, can be intended by the Prophet. The other hand, this Ummah has 12 guardians. Those who desert them would not harm them, and all of them are from Quraysh. And this meaning is reported with different wording by numerous other reports as well, and no one has ever doubted its authenticity. Now, the problem is, you may ask, okay, well, how are Sunni scholars explain these traditions? What is the meaning of these traditions? You go and see all the books who have discussed these traditions, and Sharh Bukhari, Sharh Sahih Muslim, they all have said, we don't know the meaning of these traditions. Who are these 12 caliphs? Why 12 caliphs? I mean, we have Khulafa al-Rashidun, four. You can, some of them say, okay, we have Khulafa al-Rashidun, four. They exclude Imam Hassan alayhi salam, who was caliph for a short while. And Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, five. Who are there other seven? Good caliphs, of course. We cannot include, say, for example, Yazid ibn Muawiyah as one of the caliphs, or we cannot include Abdul Malik ibn Marwan as one of the caliphs. Of course, we cannot do that. So who is that? There is no actual explanation. And they have admitted that we cannot... This hadith is from Musa Shabbat. Now, in his interpretation of Sunan al-Tirmidhi, Ibn al-Arabi is Ibn al-Arabi the jurist. This is not Ibn al-Arabi the mystic, okay? This is Ibn al-Arabi, he's Ibn al-Arabi without Al. Usually, this is how they refer to it. Ibn al-Arabi admits that the meaning of this hadith could not be understood. Now, whatever the case, As-Suyuti considers the awaited Mahdi from the Holy Family to be one of the 12. So he says, we don't know who these 12 are. They may be coming over the ages in the history, but one of them would be Al-Mahdi, who will be born later. Of course, Suyuti was a very respectful Sunni scholar, but they believe, the way they believe in Mahdi is that he will be born later on, not like us who say he's already born, because according to us, the earth cannot be without Imam, isn't it? So this is a very, very great difference between Shia and Sunni. They say, no, we don't need an Imam. Imam is anyone who is just and can guide the society. But we say that, no, Imam is above that. Imam is someone who carries that knowledge, preserves that knowledge which is needed for human beings to continue life on the earth. So, for us, the Shias, of course, we have no obscurity. I mean, it's very clear. As soon as the Prophet says 12, we say, yes, the 12 Imam. And the number 12 for us is very, very clear to whom they refer. It's this reference, okay? So, they link the Shias, I mean us, this group of traditions to another set of reports from the Prophet, which talks about the importance of certain members of his family and descendants that we refer to here as the Holy Family. Now, when it says certain members of Prophet's family, because of course, Prophet's family was much wider than the 12, than Fatima, peace be upon her, Imam Ali, Imam Hassan, and Imam Hussein, alayhi wasalam. Of course, his wives were from his family, probably his uncles could have been regarded from his family, his cousins could have been regarded from his family. So we should regard that extended family of the Prophet to the family of the Prophet. However, when we talk about the family of the Prophet, Ahlul Bayt, we talk about the Holy Family, the inspired members. This is what usually confuses our Sunni brothers and sisters, they say, okay, you talk about Ahlul Bayt, but you exclude the wives of the Prophet, for example. You talk about Ahlul Bayt, but you include Ali, you exclude his brother, for example, Ja'far ibn Abi Talib, the great martyr. I mean, why you do that? And the answer is that, okay, the Prophets have a biological family, and they have a spiritual family. And this is what is mentioned in the Quran. Isn't it? It is mentioned in the Quran that the biological son of Nuh, Allah tells him that he is not from your family. When he was drawn by the kuffar, قَالَ نُوحٌ رَبِّ إِنَّ إِبْنِي مِنْ أَحْلِي. Okay, who can doubt that son of a man is from his Ahlul Bayt? No one can doubt that. إِنَّ إِبْنِي مَنْ أَعْلِي وَإِنَّ وَعْدَكَ عَلَىٰ. And you promised that you will save my family. وَأَنْتَ أَحْكَمُ الْحَكِمُ. I have no objection, of course. I just want to know, clarify for myself. What went wrong? Where did I not understand your promise? قَالَ يَا نُورُ إِنَّهُ لَيْسَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ إِنَّهُ عَمَلٌ غَيْرُ صَالِحٍ. He is not from your family. He is a wrongdoer. So here, is Allah saying that he was not your son? No, he was not saying that. He was not saying that, for example, your wife had an affair or something. These or imams have categorically rejected this. No, he was his biological son. He's not saying that this is not your biological son. This is not your spiritual son. This is not from your spiritual Ahlul Bayt. And when the Ayatul Tathir was revealed, of course, this is one other issue between us and our Sunni brothers and sisters. And they say, okay, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهِ لِيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمْ رِجْسَ أَحْلَى الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَحِّرَكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. Allah wants to remove impurity from you, Ahlul Bayt. What about the wives of the Prophets? Aren't they not from the Ahlul Bayt? Yes, they are from Ahlul Bayt. But this Ahlul Bayt Prophet defined, and we have in many traditions, from Sunni Shia, he took those four, Amir al-Mu'mineen, his wife, and his two sons, under his cloak and said, Allahumma ha'ula'i Ahlul Bayt. This is the Ahlul Bayt that you are removing impurity from them. So, because this position cannot be known by people, and it's not biological, therefore, we need what? We need a nas. We need an explicit statement from the prophets or from the previous to tell us who has this position, who doesn't have this position. It's not for us to decide. Okay, many companions of the prophets sacrificed their lives. They were very good, just as many Muslims now sacrifice their lives for Islam. And they were very good, very faithful, very pious. But can you go into their heart and see whether they had that position or not? No. By just mentioning a past record of someone, we cannot get to know. We do not regard Ali, peace be upon him, as one of the carriers of this knowledge because of his past record. No. Because Prophet said. That's all. Of course, he had a very good past record in Islam, but that is not what, of course, has made us to come to the conclusion that we have made. Okay, let's move on. The Prophet is reported to have said on various occasions that the Book of God and his Holy Family are two precious things that he leaves behind, which would never part, and his Ummah would not go astray as long as they adhere to them. And this widely reported statement of the Prophet appearing in most of authentic sources, some of them I have mentioned there, in Sunni and Shi'i. Now, it's very interesting. You know Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, a very credible and respected scholar of hadith, of rijal, of the 8th century, Islamic calendar. He says in his book, in Sawab al-Muraqa, that these traditions are reported with numerous chains of transmission from more than 20 companions, some of whom heard it and in Arafah, others in Medina, on Prophet's deathbed, others in Qadir Khum, and still some others in Prophet's return journey from At-Taif. And then he says, there is no discrepancy because the matter is was so important that Prophet mentioned it on very different, many different occasions. That my family and the book never get parted from each other. The confusion comes when, of course, we see that some members of the family of the Prophet were not very compliant with the book. We're not very, or for example, they fought with each other. Okay, Aisha and Ali fought against each other. If both of them are from Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet, and they were. Aisha was his wife, Ali was his son-in-law, they are from Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet. Now the confusion comes, okay, what does that mean? That they are always with the Quran, they do not part. If they do not part from the Quran, why they fight each other then? Yeah, not every member of his family. Those members whom he described, defined, and pinpointed for us, these are the Ahlul Bayt that I mean, inspired with that knowledge. Now, you may say, okay, despite all these traditions, why our Sunni brothers do not listen? Why it is not the they do not understand these the way we understand. Why? Because the history developed in a sort of contrary direction. And you know that based on the context and situation, some traditions find importance, some traditions lose importance. And we know that there were very clear motivations to downplay the role of Ahlul Bayt by Banu Umayyah. We know this. Of course, Muawiyah took caliphate from Ali. Ali was from Ahlul Bayt. And there was, and all his successors, they would have lost their legitimacy if the importance of Ahlul Bayt was, of course, pinpointed and was magnified in the books of Hadith. So it was played down. We know why it was played down, of course. But that doesn't mean that we have to ignore them. Therefore, although there are many other traditions with similar purpose, reporting those Sunni and Shi'i sources, it is our only the Shi'is who have taken these statements to the full conclusion, to the full extent of what they mean, and have always condemned those Muslims who have turned a blind eye to the implications of these reports. Now, it is tradition, I don't want to go through it. مَثَلُ أَهْلِ الْبَيْتِ كَمَثَلِ سَفِينَةِ النُّمْدِ, the Ark of Noah example. And this is in Nahjul Balagha. This is very, very interesting. Very interesting. Imam Ali said, have your eyes on the Ahlul Bayt of your prophets and take their direction and follow their footprints, for they never lead you out of guidance nor take you back to destruction. Thus, if they sit, you sit. If they rise, you rise. Do not move ahead of them, for you go astray, and do not land behind them, for you perish. That is, you may say, well, if we have the Quran, why we need that? We have the Quran, we have the guidance, why we need the Ahlul Bayt? If they sit, you sit. If they rise, you rise. Do not go ahead of them. Yes, of course, because Quran can be interpreted in many, many different ways. We see how Quran, one Quran is, of course, very rigidly is interpreted by ISIS, and they have based their arguments on the Quran. One Quran is very loosely interpreted by so-called moderate Muslims who have no hijab and sometimes they don't pray. And sometimes the Quran is understood by us Muslims, Shias, by Sunnis, by Mu'tazilis, by Ash'aris. So, if that is enough, there's a very interesting conversation between Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam and a man who came from Syria and said, I want to discuss with you, to actually debate with you. And the Imam says that, okay, you want to debate with me, based on what? He said, based on the Quran. And he said, okay, you think that the Quran is sufficient to remove our differences? He said, yes. The Imam smiled and said, this man is condemning himself right now from the beginning. Because if there is no difference between me and you, why are you debating with me? So that means the Quran is not sufficient to remove the differences. And we see that it is not sufficient. And of course, we Shias believe, had the Muslims followed the Ahlul Bayt, the Islam would have taken a very different course. With no offense to anyone, this is our faith, this is our belief, that the Islam would have taken a completely different course. Now, putting these two sets of information about the 12 caliphs and the Holy Family together, the logical conclusion is that the 12 caliphs should be from the Holy Family, and Al-Mahdi is the 12th caliph. We know the 11th caliphs, of course, now coming back to our own understanding, we know who are the 11 caliphs, and we know the 12 caliphs, and we don't know anyone but him. We don't know anyone but him to be the 12th caliph, and that is Imam al-Mahdi. Now, you read this yourself, because we don't have much time. The last of these caliphs, or the 12th successor, is the Hujjah, son of Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam, who is the Mahdi and has since lived in occultation. Now, we call him Hujjah, and I will mention that. You know, Khulaini, in his book Al-Kafi, the second book of Al-Kafi, after Kitab al-Aql wal-Jah, when he talks about Imamah, he doesn't mention Kitab al-Imamah, the chapter on Imamah. He says Kitab al-Hujjah, the chapter on Hujjah. And this is a very pivotal concept in the issue of Imamah. Now, such information, this is very important, that's why I want to talk about it. You know this Abu al-Qasim Ali ibn al-Khazzaz al-Qumi, he was a contemporary of Sheikh Saduq and Sheikh Mufid, and was a student of Sheikh Saduq actually. Some of the Shias at his time, they said that if this issue of 12 Imams are so important, why the Prophet hasn't said anything about it? Why the Sunnis have not reported anything about them? Is it only us Shias who report from our own community about the Imam? Why the Sunnis have not reported anything? So he actually took upon himself to write a very huge book about the companions who have actually reported the importance of Ahlul Bayt from the Prophet, not through our Imams, through the companions of the Prophet. Now, here, he has collected a good number of these traditions in his famous book, Kifayatul Athar, Finnas ala al-A'immatil Ithna Ashar. The meaning is sufficient amount of reports regarding citation on the 12th Imam. Apart from many traditions from the Prophet through Shiite Imams, he actually brings tradition from more than 20 companions about the importance of the 12 Imams. And one of these traditions is very, very interesting. I have quoted this here. If you put it in the context, it would be very interesting. Now, he says, one of the companions, Masruq, reports. He says, we were in the company of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, who was, of course, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud was a very, very prominent companion of the Prophet. And, of course, the teacher of the Qur'an. He was one of the first people who compiled the Qur'an for himself. So, he says, we were in the company of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, checking our copies of Qur'an with him. So, as I said, he was the great teacher. He was the great teacher. He had the authentic copy of the Qur'an. When suddenly a young man asked him, did your Prophet inform you how many successors would be after him? Now, this was a surprise question. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud never would have expected someone, after all those troubles, ask him about this question. Ibn Mas'ud apparently taken by surprise both from the question and the daringness of the man. replied, "You are young and inexperienced, otherwise you wouldn't have ever asked such a question in this political climate. You would never have asked such a question. This is an issue about which no one has asked me before." Yes, you know, Abdullah Masud was a very frank and daring man. "Yes, our Prophet informed us that there will be 12 successors after him, the same number as the chiefs of the children of Israel." This is one of the traditions that Ali ibn Khazaz mentions in his book, Kifayatul Asar, and there are many other very, very interesting traditions there. What about the Quran? Do we have anything in the Quran talking about a hujjah at every time? That we need someone to be there at all times. Okay, there's one verse. There's one verse which you go to any exegete, of course those who were not somehow pressed by the urgency and political environment of their time, you will see that they have discussed this the way we discuss it now. Now, in Surah Ra'd, verse number 7, وَيَقُولُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْ لَا أُنزِلَ عَلَيْهِ آيَةٌ مِنْ رَبِّهِ. The disbelievers say, why not a miracle? Ayah here means miracle. Ayah has many different meanings. Here it means miracle. Why not a sign, a miracle from his Lord is sent down to him? You are only a warner, and there is a guide for every people. إِنَّا أَنْتَ مُنذَرْ وَلِكُلِّ قَوْمٍ hard. For every people, not for every nation. Of course we have وَمَا مِنْ أُمَّةٍ إِلَّا خَلَافِهَا نَذِيرٌ. There was not any nation unless a warner passed in them, in the past time. So nations, of course, include many different tribes, many different people, but لَكُلَّ قَوْمٍ means at every, in every instance of time, there should be one guide. Now the question is, who are these guides? You are a warner. Of course, you are a warner. You are not in charge of miracles. I decide when to send miracles, when not to send miracles. You know that. You know, prophets absolutely have no control over miracles. It's Allah who decides when to send a miracle, when not. You are not in charge of miracles, you are only a warner and a guide. And there will be a guide for every nation, for every people. Now, in As-Saduq, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, no verse of the Quran was ever revealed unless I knew where did it reveal. Whether it's revealed in a plain or on a mountain, or while the Prophet was on a camelback, or in his house, where? I know exactly where every verse was revealed, in whom it was revealed, about whom, and about what it was revealed. I also know whether it was revealed in a plain or on a mountain. He was asked, so tell us, what was revealed about you? He said, had you not asked, I wouldn't inform you, or I wouldn't have informed you. This verse was revealed about me. You are only a warner, and there is a guide for every people. The Prophet is the warner, and I am the guide to what he brought. Now, this hadith is reported in the Shawahid al-Tanzim by Hakim al-Hasakani, through different chains, of course, by Sahih as well. So we have two different sort of approaches of Islam having mentioned this hadith. And about this verse, we have many traditions from Messenger of God who said, I am the warner and Ali is the guide. Also from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, who said about this through various chains, warner is someone who guides with the, there are many traditions there. And the tradition that I just mentioned from the Prophet is reported by Kulayni, Saduq, Safar, Ayashi, Ummi. Now, warner, it doesn't mean that Prophet is not a guide, not a hadi. It means, yes, you are Munzir and Hadi, but after you there come people who are not Munzir, who do not have a mission or a message, but they guide. And that's what we believe. The prophets of Banu Israel, this is very, very important. It's very important, remember this. The prophets of Banu Israel who came after Moses, they were guides, they were not Munzir. Although they were prophets, they were guiding people to the scripture of Musa alayhi salam. Okay? Our imams are guides. They guide people to the scripture of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, to the Quran and his sunnah. Okay? They are guiding this. And that's why this hadith is very famous from the prophets, from Shia and Sunni, who said, Ulama'u ummati afdal min anbiya'i bani Israel. You have heard this. The scholars of my ummah are above, are better than the prophets of Banu Israel. Of course, by scholars, he doesn't mean, for example, a Shi'i scholar sitting in Qom or a Sunni scholar in Mecca or Medina region. No. Scholar, ulama here means those who carry that knowledge. Ulama, real ulama, okay? Who carry that knowledge. These are above the Anbiya of Banu Israel. Because their job is very similar. But they guided to Torah. They guided people to the true meaning of the Torah. The A'imma alayhi salam guide people to the true meaning of the Quran. There's a great difference between Quran and Torah. And that's why I said, Ulama ummati afdal min Anbiya'i Bani Israel. Now, in Durr al-Mansur, As-Suyuti reports, Suyuti is a very credible, very respectful Sunni scholar, Egyptian, As-Suyut, you have heard of As-Suyut in Egypt, As-Suyut is from that city, reports that Tabari ibn Marbi, Abu Nu'aym, Daylami, ibn Asakir, ibn Najjar have reported that. So, let's come to this. We talked about Shi'i sources, now let's come to Sunni sources about this tradition. When the verse, you are only a woman and there is a guide for every people was revealed, the Prophet put his hand on his chest and said, I am the warrior, and pointed to Ali's shoulder and said, you are the guide. O Ali, it is by you that the guided ones are guided after me. So, apart from the Quran, we need a guide as well to guide us to the true meaning of the Quran, and a similar meaning is reported by Al-Hakim in Mustadrak al-Sahihain. Okay, these traditions, I think you read yourself, these are all about, there's only one, because I have deleted all of them. There's too many traditions on this, that they all say that the Prophet is the Munzir, Ali is the guide that we need, with that inspired knowledge, a hujjah. No companion can be regarded as a hujjah. No scholar can be regarded as a hujjah. Of course, they call us hujjah in Islam, isn't it? We are hujjah in Islam. But you know how we are hujjah in Islam? One of our teachers used to say, you know how we are hujjah in Islam? Despite what we do, Islam is still living. That means, that's a good truth, that Islam is Christ, Islam is Han. So that's the meaning of the Hujjah to Islam. But, no, the true Hujjah, that is what we need at every age. And Imam will ask, is the Hujjah in Islam? Inshallah, next week, we talk about more about this concept of Hujjah, how important it is, and what sort of position. Who has this position? What qualities the Imam should have to become the Hujjah or proof of God? Any question? Yes.
I have a question regarding something you said before, with regard to the debate on the Prophet. You mentioned that there was a biological family and a spiritual family. Now, the family that obviously you're talking about successes, so it goes from the Prophet to Muhammad, and obviously it's the same Prophet to Muhammad. But what about people like, for example, say the Zainab from the Prophet Abbas? They were still part of that spiritual family,
but... Yes. You know, we have several categories, of course, of people. we do not regard Bibi Zainab or Abul Fazl Abbas alayhi wa salam to be in the category of these 12. So they are not hujja. They have a hujja upon themselves. They follow an imam, okay? Although they are very good, they have received lots of knowledge from them, but still they are not in that category to be appointed as a hujja. So this is a very, very, very special position, which only Al-Imam Ali said, أُولَٰئِكَ وَاللَّهَ الْأَقَلُّونَ عَدَدَ. Their number is very scarce, very few. You cannot find, for example, at every age, five of them. No. Only probably one or two, something like that. Yeah. Any other question? Yes.
What our role is towards, or what is our responsibility towards his mission, or is that part of your?
Yes. The question is, would we discuss our responsibility towards his mission? You know, we'll discuss that, because we are told that أَفْضَلُ الْأَعْمَالِ انْتِظَارُ الْفَرَجِ. The most meritorious acts of worship is waiting for the faraj of the Imam alayhi salam, waiting for the reappearance of the Imam alayhi salam. What does that mean? Of course, we will discuss. And that is our responsibility, to expect him. Of course, that expectation, I mean, if you expect someone to come to your house, for example, you would prepare certain things. So that expectation would bring some responsibilities or some sort of even attitude and qualities in us, which makes that to be very, very important. Of course, it doesn't mean that by saying, Ya Ajad ibn Hasan, Ajal alaf, we are actually waiting or expecting, you know? It's not something but words. It is a sort of something in the heart and in the action. Shall we discuss that? Anything else? Yes?
It's just the concept of knowledge of God. So was that given to the Prophet, or was that given to Nabi Adam and has sustained?
Every prophet had different level of that knowledge. We have this tradition that Ismul A'zam. Ismul A'zam is a sort of comprising or comprehensive knowledge of God. Knowledge of God. It's not name. It's knowledge of God. It has 73 letters. Again, we don't know what the 73 letters mean. For example, Adam alayhi salam was given 25 of those letters. Some prophets were given 12, some were given 2. And Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in that tradition, which is quoted from the Imam, is said to have 72 letters of that knowledge. And that is transferred to Ayyam. So, yes, it's the same type of knowledge. That knowledge in quality differs with from the knowledge we have about God, but the level, the quantity of that knowledge is different in different prophets. Okay, inshallah, see you next week.